I started teaching the course on the Beatles in the late 1990s. I was co-teaching a course at Drake University for entering freshmen. It was in a course to really give them some critical thinking skills, some writing skills. And we taught that course every year. And every year we would always do a survey with the students and say, who are your favorite musical groups? We also asked who are their favorite movies, who are their favorite performers. And the Beatles were always in the list. And it was a little bit befuddling that here are the Beatles 30 years out being very popular with this group of now college-aged kids. So we decided that we would offer a course on the Beatles in late 1990s, and we just put it out there. We thought maybe we'd get 15, 20. We ended up with 100 students in the class, and we went through the kind of format that I now use. But what we noticed as we started to do the class discussions and presentations, there were some things the students needed to know, but they weren't readily available in easily digestible forms. So we started writing these little mini lectures. So you'd go into a class, we'd talk about something for a while, we'd play some music, show some video, and then one of us would give a 3 to 5 minute lecture. So when I started to do this for an online version, I said, that's a podcast. So let's go ahead and tool that up for the podcast audience, and that's how it got started.
So there are, what, 39 podcasts?
There have been up to 45, 50. And every year I refresh and eliminate some and add some others. But yes, right now there are 39.
The one that talks about Liverpool, or I think the first one, that talks about there's no way to just in one book summarize everything. How do you take 40 or 50 podcasts and decide what lessons to teach?
It's a choice, and part of what I do is I'm regularly reading the literature that's out there. I'm regularly attending conferences where people are speaking on some of these topics. And then from those, just try to make sure my list is somewhat current. There are also some ones that students find very interesting, so I keep those in there, too, as a way to keep them motivated. Too often, we get podcasts that run 25, 30, 40 minutes, and the students just tune out. So I try to keep it 3 to 5 minutes, have a point with it, have some interesting ideas, basically something they might be able to take back home and share. Or talk to somebody at dinner time and say, did you know the Beatles were from Liverpool? Do you know where Liverpool is?
Well, let's talk about one of those lessons. I mean, Liverpool, you talk about kind of it being a melting pot for different cultures. Do you draw from that at all why the Beatles ended up adopting so many musical styles and trying so many different things in that history, how the sound changed so often?
One of the things you notice with the early Beatles performances is they do a lot of American artists that you probably wouldn't find in London. But if you start to look at Liverpool, it's a port city. Everybody coming across the Atlantic would land in Liverpool and drop off their supplies. Sailors would come, bring records, and it gave the Beatles a chance to hear a lot of new music before it really had a chance to, if you will, hit mainstream. And in this day and age, there were only the local radio stations, and they really didn't play a lot of the music. Most of the music the Beatles picked up was through records that they would get from incoming sailors.
We're gonna write a little letter, gonna mail it to my local DJ. It's a rocking little record, I want my jockey to play. Roll over Beethoven, gotta hit it again today. You know my temperature's rising.
As far as songs in class, do you pinpoint this best identifies this period, kind of along with this album or this kind of sound?
That's what I try to do, because obviously the students may want to listen to the entire album, but they're not going to focus on all 14 songs equally. So I try to pick out the two or three that probably have the best indication of the style for that album. I try to find the best two or three in that mix that also help them learn something about how the Beatles were changing from one album to the next album. And we began, as you mentioned, with Love Me Do, and that's the first song they listened to, and actually there are three different versions of it. And there are three different drummers on the song. And so one of the first things the students do is start to listen to what's the drum sound like in this version versus that version versus another version, and what conclusions can they draw from a different kind of drummer, because the other three principles remain the same.
Love, love me do. You know I love you.
Now, with the podcast, there are solely lectures. Are they then assigned then to listen to particular songs, or how do you inspire that to?
You pick a particular period, such as when the Revolver album came out, and I'll identify three or four songs that I think they ought to listen to, and there will be some readings that they'll have to do in the books that we have for the class. And then, because of the recent release of the remastered sets, all of the songs in the Beatles catalog are available on YouTube. And so I can then have them go to YouTube and listen to the song, and allows them to do it. If it is a song that isn't in the public domain or isn't publicly available, put it that way, I then have a Blackboard site where I can put it behind a firewall so only people in the course can listen to it, much as what happens if you were in the class on campus and you walked into the class, you would hear the music, but you can't take it with you when you leave.
I'll just admit, I think my favorite albums are Revolver and Rubber Soul. Maybe what two or three songs might typify then, or maybe you can pick one.
For a couple of them, Norwegian Wood, which is a song John Lennon wrote. And then you have Taxman, which is a song that George Harrison wrote. And I think that gives you a good mix of what was going on there. George was starting to assert himself a little bit more as a performer and a songwriter. And this was a chance for him to show his stuff.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me.
John, on the other hand, was continuing to evolve, and during this time it was when he started to write some lyrics that were different from the earlier Boy Likes Girl, Girl Likes Boy, Girl and Boy Go Off Hand in Hand. He started to write some songs that had a little bit more of an adult edge to them, and I think for a lot of people that marked a significant shift for the Beatles from their earlier mop top era to something a little bit more serious.
You ever just have information overload because you want to teach lessons of about the individuals and not just music? You want to probably talk about them coming to the U.S., political things. You probably have some information you'd have to just leave out because you have to talk about music plus all the other things the Beatles stood for.
And that's what makes it fun. You get to really edit the bulk of material out there. It's not like some classes where people are scrambling to fill up 15 weeks. I, on the other hand, probably could do somewhere in the neighborhood of a year's worth of material, and I have to edit it down to a 15-week unit. Set of units. And in doing so, it makes it a little bit more interesting. You get to pick the things you like. Plus, every time I teach it, I go back and refresh and probably change about 25% of the class.
So do you get some response opinions from people from all over the world on this?
I do. And in fact, one of the things I've done after I started making the podcasts available on iTunes U and people could listen to them, there is a link off of the iTunes page where they can go to a version of the course. And I have a public version of the course. It doesn't have any copyrighted material, doesn't give you access to any kind of Blackboard site, but it does go through the course basically as I've structured it. And when they see that course, they'll oftentimes go through and take a couple of units. They'll send me an email or two. Several students actually have been taking the course, not for credit, just to take it because they're interested in the topic. And so I'll get these emails in the middle of the night of somebody who's completed paper assignment number 4, and would I have a chance to read it and comment back to them.
What's the most interesting location where you have a student, somebody in, I don't know, some third world country? Or?
Timbuktu.
Wow.
For a while, we had this online student from Timbuktu, and we tried to do everything we could to keep her in the mix because it was nice to say we have students from Illinois to Timbuktu and back. I also have a woman who actually lived in Hamburg, probably still does, but when she took the course, she lived in Hamburg. So when we talk about the Beatles playing Hamburg in 60 through 62, she actually went out and took pictures of the various places and what they look like today and sent them to the listserv that everybody in the class could see. So it became a chance for everybody to share with each other. And some people were saying, boy, that was great. And then they'd read some of the places where some of the venues the Beatles played, if you will, near prostitution sites. And so the question was, is that still going on? And they're trying to clean up their image. But it was still a sort of rough area in the 1960s when the Beatles played there.
Does the 30th anniversary of Lennon's death, has that brought out more information that might be part of these too, like the end of this BBC series?
The BBC series, they also have gone back and remastered all of the good Lennon LPs and re-released those. There have been some people who have been coming forward and talking about some of the events that went on at that time. During that whole period, I was actually teaching at Rutgers College in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and heard Howard Cosell announce to the world that John Lennon had been killed. And then the following weekend, I went up to New York and went to where now Strawberry Fields is located in Central Park with thousands and thousands of people. And while I've looked at the video, I've never found myself there. But I know some of my friends, and I saw them as well as they do these pans of the crowd.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Forever.